After all his great quest, King Aswapati at last receives the vision of the Supreme Divine Mother. She envelops him, and she doesn't wait for him to ask or offer his prayer. She, of course, knows what is the great aspiration that has led him on his quest. And we saw that she welcomed him. She said, she calls him son of strength. And she tells him, no soul is thy companion in the light. No one else has reached as high as you have. Alone thou standest at the eternal doors. But then she tells him, what you have won is thine. It is yours. Nobody can take it away from you. But ask no more. Don't ask what I know that you want to ask. Don't ask anything more. And then now we are in the midst of this long explanation which she gives him, why he should not ask for her to descend with her full light and bliss and power for earth and men. So she's describing the state of humanity. Of course, this story is supposed to have taken place long, long ago, back at the dawn of human history. But the way that she describes humankind is remarkably familiar to us. It describes ourselves as we are aware of our situation. But she does tell him that the great mystery, the great puzzle of the universe, the knot is tied in humankind. So it has to be solved. It has to be untied in humanity. So we have to see what she says about that. At the moment, she is saying that man wants to guide the world, but he can't guide himself. He would save his soul, but he cannot save his life. The light his soul has brought, his mind has lost. That is where we're going to start today. You would read, please, Ante.
The light his soul had brought, his mind had lost. All he had learned is soon again in doubt. A sun to him seems the shadow of his thoughts. Then all is shadow again and nothing true. Unknowing what he does, or whither he tends, he fabricates signs of the real in ignorance. He has hitched his mortal error to truth's star. Wisdom attracts him with a luminous mask, but never has he seen the face behind. A giant ignorance surrounds his lore.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything?
A son to him seems
I think we, it's one of these places where Sri Aurobindo's taking a poetic license with the order of the words. So it becomes easier to understand if we say the shadow of his thoughts seems like a sun to him. Yes? Yes, Don.
Just earlier, you told us that the Holy Mother has said that whatever you have learned, whatever you have experienced, you'll not forget. But here it seems he is.
No. Here she's not. When it says he, here, this is man, humanity in general.
Okay.
That's what it started at the top of page 336. She's explaining to him about why he shouldn't ask her more. She says, humanity is not ready. No? How can you speak for men whose hearts are dumb?
Line 72, man's soul awake aspires in vain.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
I mistook my pronouns.
Yes.
That's us.
Yes, it is us. Yes, it's all about us. So it seems that we bring some light, our soul is carrying a light, we bring it with us when we are born, but as the mind develops, that light gets lost. And everything that we have learned, actually the mind has learned amazing things. Yesterday I was seeing a documentary about the sun, and how over the last 200 years they have found out the composition of the sun and the amount of heat and how they could do that. No? Amazing achievements of the mind. No? But a giant ignorance surrounds his law. Everything that we've learned is surrounded by this ocean of ignorance, all the things that we don't know and that our mind can't find out.
Why does he use
law? L-O-R-E. It means learning, traditional learning that is passed down from generation to generation. It's the knowledge that we pass on. We speak about folklore, yes. Yeah, but law. So of course the trouble with that kind of knowledge is that it gets kind of fossilized. It's not anymore living. When we make new discoveries, then it's a living knowledge. But anyway, we have some body of knowledge that humanity thinks is more or less clear. It's growing and expanding and getting adapted and modified. But there's immense areas about which we don't even ask questions. No. So the mind works things out as we create kind of shadows and we think, oh, that's the light, this is going to lead us to the truth. But very soon we discover that it's not a sun, it's a shadow again, and everything is in doubt. The problem is that we don't know what we're doing and we don't know where we are heading. We are part of this human journey, but we don't know what the goal is. Unknowing what he does or whither he tends. Whither means to where. What is the goal? So we fabricate, we make up or manufacture things that we think are signs, signals of reality. And then there's this nice line, he has hitched his mortal error to truth's star. I don't know, I remember from my childhood a popular song, Hitch your wagon to a star. You must remember it, Don. Yep. And the amazing thing about this song, which was popular, I think, in the late 40s and early 50s, actually it's a line from a poem written in the 1600s by the poet John Donne, who's one of the metaphysical poets. And in the context of his poem, it's very nice, you know, that we hitched, that humanity has to hitch his wagon to a star. The star of the ideal will carry you very far. Mm-hmm. But here he says, humanity, we have hitched our mortal error, our doubtful ways of finding things out and so on. We have got some kind of a star which we've linked it to, which is leading us, carrying us even maybe. Especially if we've hitched our star, our error, to the star of truth. And in The Life Divine he says that this is one of the things about materialist science, the approach of the materialist. He says its own cure is contained in it, because the sincere people are really trying to find out what is real, what is the truth. And if they go on seeking long enough, they will find it. So wisdom attracts us, but what we see are masks, luminous masks. They give us some light, but so far man has never seen the face behind the mask, the true wisdom. The mother says this to Aswapati. Not even Aswapati, I would say, because he has had wisdom revealed to him, but certainly not John Donne. Some luminous masks he might have seen. It's clear. Anybody still has anything to ask? So the next sentence is very interesting, Jocelyn. Yes. Well, it's part of the paradox of being human. No? Plasm, I think, is the basic stuff that's in our blood.
Blood is
made.
Blood, in plasm floats the red cells of life.
Yeah. So the amazing thing is that we are here in a material body, but we have this capacity of consciousness, of at least mental consciousness, and of emotion, of feeling. How is it that this physical heart feels? In fact, this whole passage is speaking about the paradox of being human. Every human being has been assigned, we've been given a task. We've been given the task of meeting the cosmic mystery, the great enigma, in this dumb figure of a material world. We have to meet the mystery in this material form. You know? And so we come in disguise. We're not here in the way we really are, in our true selves and nature. We have a false passport that we've come, and we've got a false identity. Our personage is not what we live, the being that we live out here in the world is
that's
not the true self. It's more that, well, I mean, of course, the ego is the delegate of the soul, which emanates this personage. Yes, we are all of us playing a role in their drama, no? And we are compelled to do this. We can't help it, no? Because it's part of this role that we've been given. We've been sent here like kind of secret agents to get something done, no? And we have to play this role. And because of that, we have to obey the influence, the rule of the inconscient, the rule of matter. But we have done this, we have sunk into matter in order to fulfill our soul. There are several places where Sri Aurobindo gives us this message, that the truth of us, our true personage, belongs to some higher level. But by coming here, by accepting a human fate, our soul is becoming greater. It will find its fulfillment through accepting this assignment. So in the course of evolution, the Earth Mother, who's in charge of the evolution, has woken up in mankind from her lower driven forms, the animals and the plants. She's created or brought about this half-conscious being, and she's given to us the power to control some of her forces. So we are having trouble with that. Painfully, we guard this heavy responsibility. We don't seem to be very good at it. It's too much for us. So his mind, the human mind, is a lost torchbearer. We're supposed to be carrying the torch and leading evolution forward. But here we are. We are lost on the road, and so we are wandering and not leading properly. But what we are doing from an evolutionary point of view is that the life force, the breath, is becoming more conscious, is gaining the power to think. And the plasm, it's also the life force, you know, in the form of blood. It's learning to feel.
I wonder if there's a difference between plasm and plasma. Plasma is in the blood.
John, do you have a dictionary?
Plasma is the blood. Even I was confused last time.
Plasma is the blood.
Like protoplasm, you know.
Larry, you can cast any light?
No, but I think Jenny has a point. It came across this sometime in the past, and
if you
this issue, and if some other kind of more basic fluid.
The dictionary is just there on the top shelf next to you.
The dictionary here?
Yeah, what does
living matter or genetic material of a biological cell? So it's not plasma. It's not.
Could you read it again slowly and clearly?
The living matter or genetic material of a biological cell.
Plasm.
Plasm. Protoplasm.
Okay.
What constitutes the cell?
Yeah.
The juice of the cell.
The liquid constitutes.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you presume in breath to think?
You illumine it with the light of consciousness. Breath is the life force. It has a consciousness of its own, but it doesn't think. But when the mind comes, man is the mental being. Man illumines the life, the life force in us becomes more conscious. But still, it's hard work. We labor with this slow and skeptic brain. It works slowly, and it is it has to deal with doubt. It's important that it should deal with doubt. And it's helped by the reason, which does have a fire, an energy, a light, but it's vacillating. It can't be, it's not entirely reliable, it's shaky. But what we are doing, why are we laboring? It's to make our human thought and will a door, a magic door for knowledge to enter the darkness of the world, for the inconscient to become conscious, and for love to rule this realm of strife and hate where there's so much conflict going on. This seems to be the assignment. Our mind is impotent. It's unable to reconcile these contradictions. The pull of earth, of matter, and the attraction of the higher consciousness. And here we are tied to matter with a thousand bonds. But still, because of that light of the soul within, humanity, man, each of us is gradually lifting ourselves up to be a conscious God. We've gained some consciousness. Perhaps in our origin we might be even mental Godheads, but here we are, we've come to earth in order to become something more. Patricia.
Even when the glory of wisdom crowns his brow, when mind and spirit share the grandiose ray to exalt this product of the germ and gene, this alchemist's miracle and flagrant gas. And he who shared the animals run and crawl lifts his box statured to the immortal heights. His life still keeps the human middle weight. His body he resigns to death and pain, abandoning matter, his too heavy charge.
Thank you. Lift up. Exaltation is when you're lifted up. So there are some very developed human beings who have a glory of wisdom, who have reached higher experiences and had higher illuminations, and the mind and the spirit is developed enough to shed, to spread a grandiose ray, lifting up this product, this human being who is a product of a sperm and genes, no? That's what we are in our material bodies. And he says we are also an alchemist's miracle from plasm and gas. The alchemists were the first chemists who were trying to find the way to transmute matter, to be able to take ordinary metals and turn them into gold. And they felt that if they could do that, it would... They made a connection between the material process and the psychological process, that this would give them the philosopher's stone, which would not only turn ordinary materials into gold, but would also give immortality. Yeah. So here we are. We are some kind of miracle like that, with the possibility, at least, of immortality, although we've been made out of very simple material, plasm and gas. So now that one who shared the animals run and crawl, we in the past we were like that. No? Now we can lift and the heights of our thought, stature is how high you are, no? Up towards the immortal's heights. We may be able to do that in our minds and our spirit, but our life is still tied to the human middle way. Our life is somewhere in between. It can't reach those immortals' heights. And the body has to be abandoned. We have to resign it, accept that it will suffer pain and eventually death. There's nothing we can do about it. So he accepts that he will leave the earth. He abandons matter. It's a responsibility. The responsibility to transfigure matter is too big a responsibility for him to take. It's too heavy charge. Earlier we had trust, and here we have charge. This is the assignment, the mission that humanity has been given, and it seems to be too difficult for us. But he tells us over and over again in the poem that this is what we are supposed to do, actually. And why aren't you doing it? Helmut, would you read on?
A thaumaturge, skeptic of miracles, spirit left sterile of its occult power by an unbelieving brain and credulous heart, he leaves the world to end where it began. His work unfinished, the claims of heavenly Christ. Thus has he missed creation's attribute. Half pregnant stocks, his star of destiny. A vast and vain long tried experiment. And even though high conception doubtfully done, worlds like portals are not seen its forward, a zigzag towards unknown dangerous ground. Ever repeating its habitual walk, ever retreating after marches long, and hardiest victories without sure result, drawn endlessly an inconclusive game.
Thank you. A thaumaturge is a miracle worker. So humanity, human beings are miracle workers who don't believe in miracles.
But Sharavan in Ajanda de Mother Mother said that humanity trusts the miracle. But no miracle, for the supramental is there, everything is miracle, not miracle.
Well,
also describe, I'm just.
But if it's a question of supramentalizing matter,
yes.
We have difficulty in believing that we can do it.
Yes.
Although that's the task we've been given.
Yeah.
Yes. We are supposed to be
the mind can do miracles.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Even the mind can.
The level of mind, all these occult powers that the
yes.
The
yes.
But Sharavan, I tell you and I tell everybody, I received some. I have a question maybe 6 months ago and about what you said. And yesterday I listened 1961 when Mother described Supreme is very sceptic. He don't trust, he is very contradiction on the way. And Mother said no. And he described about the self. And he tells
the self.
And she tells, when you support the supramental light, the supramental, you never die. You say, my description, very simple. But Mother said, Shrobindo opens the door. When you are finished, you go directly to the supramental world with Shrobindo and you help for transforming the world.
Hmm.
Alors, for me, this is the goal. Alors, suddenly, I have something in me totally...
Turned around.
Yes. Alors, I feel okay. Sorry, hein?
Mm.
I don't know, but I felt okay. But gift inside is incredible. I have some... Last year, I have Mother take me and put me in the platform. And 1 year, I learning something about many books. But I receive what I want to go. What is your vision of the book? Alors, I do.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So here, others, yes. The mother is speaking about humanity in general, humanity in the mass. As mental beings, here we are potential miracle workers, but we don't believe that we have that power of miracle. And our spirit, she says, is left sterile of its occult power because the brain doesn't believe and the heart too readily believes. Credulous is if you... too ready to believe. We're too ready to believe that we are limited and belong to earth. No? So the result is that we leave the world and it's just the same as it was when we came. No? It leaves the world to end where it began. We hope that we are going to heaven and we are going to be rewarded. We'll receive a heavenly prize. But we haven't finished the work that we were sent to do. And so we've missed the absolute purpose of creation. We are ready to stop our star of destiny. We maybe have hooked our error to truth star, but then we say, stop, it's enough now. Halfway. So as a result, the world's life remains a vast and vain, long-tried experiment. The attempts go on. There's a high conception of what the earth life should be, but it doesn't find the instrument to fulfill it. An artist might have a wonderful high conception, but if he doesn't have the sufficient technique and capacity and ability to serve his conception properly, then the result will be doubtfully done, not carried out in a doubtful way. So that's why the world's life is faltering on, going on in a very unsteady way, not seeing where it is going. Because it doesn't see where it's going, it zigzags this way and that way, and enters unknown, dangerous ground. We are in danger. And it goes on repeating its habitual walk. There are some great achievements, great efforts are made. There have been long marches forward, and even victory, hardiest victory, very courageous victories. But the result of those battles is not sure. And there's always a draw between the different forces. This long game of positive and negative goes on, and the outcome is not assured. The game is drawn endlessly.
Perhaps the credulous heart also thinks it's already arrived. You just say, oh, Mother's doing everything. And
yes.
You know, the Christians say, we're going to heaven, all we have to do is believe. And or it's a little more complicated than that.
Shall we go on? Yeah. Take este. Shall we pause there?
Failure is not failure whom God needs. To all the slow, mysterious march goes by. And in the inevitable power has left this little the self-fulfilling transcendence trades man's God. The driver of the soul upon this path. It knows its steps, its way is inevitable. And how shall the end be obtained when God is God?
Thank you. So the first two sentences give one side of the picture, then comes the other side. This whole creation has a radiant purpose, but that is still concealed. It's concealed in this ill-fitting and voluminous robe of all the material appearances. And there's this mighty blindness, the force of consciousness which is evolving, but it's stumbling on. It isn't seeing clearly what has to be done. But there's luminous chance, lovely things happen and help things to move forward. So its strength gets fed on those gifts of luminous chance. But so far, we have to say, the human instrument has failed. And so the Godhead, the divinity within, sleeps within its seed, within there's a seed of the divinity each of us is supposed to become. But at the moment, it's prevented from sprouting and growing as it should. It's entangled in these forms which it has created itself. But because that seed is there, all these failures are not really failures. Through everything, this slow, mysterious march goes on. An immutable power, a power which can't be changed, does not change, has made this changing world. And in us, treading man's path, following this human journey, is a self-fulfilling transcendence. A power which is not limited by any of the limitations of the forms it has made. And it is self-fulfilling. It doesn't need any help to fulfill its aims. That self-fulfilling transcendence is driving the soul upon its path. And it knows all the steps, and it knows the way. The way is inevitable. So how shall the end be vain when God is guide? It's not possible. He is sure to fulfill his purpose. It means that all this stumbling and faltering and error and all the things that look like failures actually are necessary steps on the road. On this complicated work of Mahasaraswati to get everything right. Patty, you would read?
However man's mind may tire or fail his flesh, a will prevails, cancelling his conscious choice. The goal recedes, the formless vastness soars, retreating into an immense unknown. There is no end to the world's stupendous march. There is no rest for the embodied soul. It must live on, describe all time's huge curve. An influx presses from the closed beyond, forbidding to him rest and earthly ease. Till he has found himself, he cannot pause. A light there is that leads, a power that aids. Unmarked, unfelt, it sees in him and acts. Ignorant, he forms the all-conscious in his depth. Human looks up to superhuman peaks. A borrower of supernature's gold, he paves his road to immortality.
Thank you. Clear. Nothing to say.
His consciousness lends just everyday ordinary conscious choice?
Oh, it might be any kind of choice that we make. And the choices that we make, the Lord takes them into consideration. They influence the way things happen. But that transcendent will overrules if necessary. Mm-hmm. So, for example, sometimes we think it's all too much for us and that we better drop it. But there's that influx pressing won't allow us to rest, to say it's too difficult.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Does Sri Aurobindo often use the word conscious in this way?
He means the choice that we are conscious of making mm-hmm. may not be the soul's choice.
Yes, I understand. This is why I don't think I've ever seen it used
like this. Because that's a characteristic of human beings, no? That we are conscious of having to choose, and we make choices. Of course, some of them are really unconscious. We just do it automatically, driven by nature or karma or something. But now and again in our lives, we have to choose things, and we make choices. They might be disastrous for us. So the soul says, all right, that's what you want, but let's guide it another way. Something like that. That's what's happening. Somehow the all-conscient, the all-consciousness, the omniscient is getting formed in the depths of ourselves. On the surface we are ignorant, we're having all these experiences, but through those experiences the divinity within, the all-conscient divinity within is getting formed. We'll go a little further. Jean-Yves, would you read?
The high gods look on men and watch and choose today's impossibilities of the future states. His conscience trembles the incumbent's touch. His barriers see beneath the infinite. The immortals have the entries in his life. The ambassadors of the unseen draw near. A splendor selling from the mortal air. Love passing through his heart, a wandering guest. Beauty surrounds him by a major power. He has visits of a large revealing joy. Grief whitenesses release him from himself, enticing towards the glory ever in front, hopes of a deathless sweetness, new and lead. His mind is crossed by strange discovering fire. Rare intimations lift his stumbling speech to a moment's kinship with the eternal world. A mass of wisdom circles through his brain, perturbing him with glimpses of divine. He lays his hands sometimes on the unknown. He communes sometimes with eternity.
Thank you. So all these higher things are happening as well, indicating our higher possibilities.
Great,
yeah, there seem to be moments when our consciousness widens and we have a glimpse of something. And then these intuitions come and suddenly we feel we know something, we've learned or discovered something. Sometimes even words come. We find ourselves saying things. Sri Aurobindo says, I plan to say such and such, and then out of my mouth comes things at which reason trembles. Reason trembles when it hears me saying those things. And this mask, this is a masquerade. This is a when people wear masks and carnival time, they celebrate in the streets. So somehow this disguised form of wisdom passes through the brain, troubling, disturbing, stimulating it with these half-divine glimpses. And sometimes these peak experiences come when we really have a living contact with the unknown and a communication with the eternal, the transcendent. Murakan, you will read?
He lays his hand sometimes on the unknown. He communes sometimes with eternity. A strange and grandiose symbol of its birth, and immortality, and straight rule, and pure perfection, and its shadowless bliss. Are these afflicted creatures mighty faith? In him the earth mother sees draw near the change, foreshadowed in a dumb and fiery death, a goddess wrong. From her transmuted links, an alchemy of heaven on nature's face.
Thank you. We'll pause there. So this is still about humanity. The fact that we are souls born into matter. This is a strange and grandiose symbol. Something very splendid and significant. And that means that although we are afflicted creatures, imperfect and suffering, we have this mighty fate, immortality, spirit room, pure perfection, and a shadowless bliss. That's our true fate. And the mother is watching us human beings and seeing, approaching nearer, the change. This is the earth mother, our material, the earth goddess, the spirit in matter. She's waiting for this change. It that's foreshadowed. It is prepared and predicted in her dumb and fiery depths of the earth. From her limbs, from these material forms, shall be drawn a godhead, a divinity, one of these alchemical miracles, an alchemy of heaven on nature's base. This is the mission of humanity. This is the role we are supposed to fulfill. This is what the Earth Mother is expecting from us. So then she tells Aswapati what she wants him to do. May I read this last passage? Yeah. She says, adept of the self-born, unfailing line. There's a whole dynasty of avatars like Aswapati, and he's one of them. Self-born, unfailing line. So she tells him, leave not the light to die, the ages bore. Help still humanity's blind and suffering life. Obey thy spirit's wide, omnipotent urge. A witness to God's parley with the night, it leaned compassionate from immortal calm and housed desire, the troubled seed of things. Ascend to thy high self, create, endure. Cease not from knowledge, let thy toil be vast. No more can earthly limits pen thy force. Equal thy work with long, unending times. Traveler upon the bare eternal heights, tread still the difficult and dateless path, joining the cycles with its austere curve, measured for man by the initiate gods. My light shall be in thee, my strength thy force. Let not the impatient Titan drive thy heart. Ask not the imperfect fruit, the partial prize. Only one boon, to greaten thy spirit, demand. Only one joy, to raise thy kind desire. Above blind fate and the antagonist powers, moveless there stands a high, unchanging will. To its omnipotence leave thy work's result. All things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. So she asks him to return to Earth and go on being a human being there. And she promises that her light will be with him and her strength will strengthen him. And she says, don't think about the result. Leave the result to the omnipotent, high, unchanging will. Only ask one thing, to greaten thy kind, to continue to help uplifting humanity. And only one joy, the same thing. No, sorry, the first boon is to greaten thy spirit, to become greater. And the joy will be in uplifting thy kind, your race, your species. And she promises him that all things shall change when it's the right time. in God's transfiguring hour. So you would think that's that, no? That she has had her say and told him what to do, and that that's all he has to do. He just has to do what she tells him. But the canto is not finished yet. He answers her. So we'll have a look at that next week.
The meaning of the transfiguring, God's transfiguring power, the hour when God
transfigures everything.
Transform.
The antagonist's powers, who are they?
The Lord sometimes dresses himself up as an antagonist power to make us stronger, maybe. I mean, that's the answer that comes just now. It's a much more complicated answer.
But definitely, the foundations. Mm-hmm.
These two advices of the Divine Mother would be also for us, to
yes.
raise our spirit and to raise our kind, our intention.
Yes. He can ask, yes. But she doesn't want to allow him to ask what he had wanted to ask, because she says, if I give you I have to give you what you ask, but don't ask for the partial prize. There are no lines from here which Mother read. So we'll just stop there for today with these words of the Mother echoing in our minds.